Please excuse any distortions in audio. This is season one and we are still learning. Thank you. Welcome to DotCast. This is Ruth Diaz and my guest, Carolina Trejos. Did I get your name right, Carolina?
Yes, absolutely.
And I have invited you onto this webcast slash podcast because of A, I had this amazing conversation with you a few weeks ago, and B, some of the things you talked about were really my growth edge in the world where I'm trying to deepen, orient, and transform myself as a leader. And your candidness around your own transformative process was very heartening for me and actually already has changed some of the ways that I am a leader.
Oh, thank you.
What I'd love to talk to you about today is kind of a continuation of our conversation and maybe some highlights of what we talked about last time, at least in the beginning, and we can see where it goes. And that was acknowledging that leaders have bias, and specifically around diversity. And so I'm curious if you could share a little bit about your story there and your understanding of leadership and bias.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, Ruth, thank you so much for the opportunity to join. I'm very passionate about this. It is an honor to be here. And I really appreciate that you as a leader are stepping up and really making a difference by sharing this that you're so passionate about, because this is really transformational for all of us. Personally, I know, and I know that this is true for everybody, that we all have biases. Mm-hmm. And really that's not perhaps the problem, because we're all human beings, you know, and we have our things, you know, our upbringings, our limiting beliefs, and that's part of our journey. Problem is when we just don't understand, or we try to deny that we have those biases, because then we really cannot make a change. We really cannot do the auto observation and realize that there are things that we're doing that are not for the best of humanity, for the best of organizations, for even for the best of relationships, and for the best of ourselves. So it is in that auto-examination, with the understanding that we are all biased, that we can be making changes. That's why, you know, I love, you know, the work that you do, because we do need professionals like you. And there, I know there's many out there that are out there with organizations and really, you know, sending that message, because it is until we understand that we do have those biases that we can start taking corrective actions. And, you know, you are an example of leading us through ways and techniques that we can better address those, so that we can just really maximize, you know, not only our own potential, but the organizations that we work with, the people that we live around, and it just makes us a better place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you so much. I love it. It's bringing me into this question of what are my biases? And one of, I'm not sure if I spelled that right. Can you see my writing? And can you see me zooming in here?
Oh, yeah.
But we're talking about biases as a leader. And what you were sharing reminded me that I have been asking myself, what are my biases as a human and then also as a leader? For example, as a human being, I noticed that I have targeted white males before, and I felt justified in that because I'm in a culture of people who target white males. And yet I have different leadership roles. So as a therapist, I realized recently that allowing targeting of white males in my therapy group or participating in that was actually a microaggression. And a macroaggression is what I would call it. It was quite brutal what I was doing. And I had to realize, like, I need to fess up to this and apologize and make this a safe space for everybody. If it was a group where other leaders were wanting to understand their own biases, I might target white males a little bit more. But in a therapy group, I had to realize my bias was showing up and becoming an aggression that was not loving. And you told me some really good wisdom around intervening from love instead of anger. I'm wondering if you could share more about that.
Yeah. And but first, you know, I just wanted to say, Ruth, you know, that what you have done is so courageous to just really have a moment of auto-examination and then reach back, understand what's going on and reach back and apologize and try to do things differently. A lot of us, we're not used to be vulnerable, particularly, you know, when we're in leadership roles, we feel a lot of times that we just have to be perfect or that people are looking at us. And it is within that vulnerability that we're able to connect with more and really show leadership, because we're all humans and just, you know, growing and evolving. So that is awesome to hear that from you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes.
It was a powerful recognition of my bias.
Yes, and I guess, you know, the question that you had for me was around my story, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I'm originally from Panama. I'm Hispanic, which is really a combination of Black, White, and Indigenous. And we are a big part of the population, but in Panama, you know, there's a lot of diversity. We have Black, Indigenous, and there's a white population, and then the ones that are mixed. But growing up in Panama, there was a lot of racism and discrimination and biases against mainly the Indigenous and Black people. For me, that's how I grew up. At the beginning, you know, when you're younger, you question a lot of those. You're confused. You don't understand, because within your innocence, you know that we are all human beings. But as we grow and we just absorb, these things become just natural, part of who we are. When it becomes so natural, you grew up around it, it's so hard to see it. And it was not until I came to the U.S. and then I started experiencing the discrimination against myself, I realized this is really not right. When you start, and for me, that was like a breakthrough moment, which, you know, I loved it because it really allowed me to look back at myself, you know, and what I was doing too. So I realized, you know, I was also part of the problem. I was being biased, judgmental, and discriminatory against people of other races, like the Black and the Indigenous. That breakthrough moment allowed me to really be able to ask for forgiveness and be passionate about it, to understand that we all are human beings and we deserve to be treated fairly and equally. You know, that's really where all my passion around diversity started. But at the same time, you know, even with that, you know, I started my career at the Hershey Company and I became the president of the Hispanic Diversity Council. And then as I moved through other bigger organizations like Kraft, Kimberly-Clark, I took a very active leadership role because I knew that this whole unfairness that was happening in the workplace just needed a voice. I also came to realize that voice, that passion that I had was coming from a space of anger because I was a little resentful that things were just really unfair. And as an activist wanting to share my voice, my foundation was off. Like I had a lot of anger. And I came to realize that that anger is really destructive. It's not only destructive for those that you're trying to collaborate and come up with solutions that are empowering, that are win-win, but it's also destructive to you as a human being, because nothing that comes from this place of anger, it's going to really end up with great fruit. You know, it might provide some accomplishments, achievements, things, you know, can move ahead, but if the foundation is off, I have found, you know, at the end of the day, it's just really not solid. It's not sustainable. And it doesn't feel good with that inner self that we all, you know, at the very bottom of who we are as human beings, we're founded on love.
Mm. Wow. When you say that, I get this really powerful metaphor of if we think about what foundation is, you know, what holds our feet, I get this metaphor of lava and this idea that it's constantly changing. When the lava is coming up, the ground is shifting and building. And if our feet was on that lava, we wouldn't want to stand solidly in the same place. We'd be really dancing about a bit of just nothing's comfortable. And this idea that the love of almost like the gravitational pull that holds us on the ground together, that joins us. But if we're standing on the lava, on the painful or the sharp parts, then we can't remember that common ground.
Yeah, That is, I love that. I love that, Ruth. It's a great way to see it.
That really struck me last time, and once again this time, is I struggle with my anger in that I believe my anger is also my passion. And my sometimes anger can be a really good intervention. And it's very context specific and how it's carried out. Like, for example, some of my coaching clients and therapy clients have been out in these marches, Black Lives Matter. They've come to me and they've said, Ruth, I remember what you said about screaming from your belly instead of screaming from your throat. And I've been practicing screaming from my belly. And when I come home, my voice is less raw and I feel more cleansed and empowered to be part of the change we're marching for. And so I think about how, like, anger, when anger is grounded and knows that it will always be there, so it doesn't have to come out and break things and shatter things. It can be really powerful to hold that as a warning of saying, I'm willing to dance with you here and I'm willing to hold my love of you here. And I also can burn and I can be on fire if the unfairness of, if the judgment that you're blind to continues. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, Ruth, because anger is a better place to be than when we're thinking of the different emotional levels, right? Despair, victimhood. Anger elevates us to take action. So it's definitely, it can be a catapult, because from anger we go to courage, right? And when we are angry, we notice something is off, something is wrong. So it's not to say and deny that anger is one of the human emotions. That, you know, really leverage that anger to have the courage to speak up, you know, go and stand for what you truly believe in. And then with that courage that you gained, you know that in order for things to really happen and for change to come about, because, you know, you go back to what is it that at the end that we want? We want for everybody to be treated equally and fairly, right? So that comes from a space of love. We go back to that, because if we are doing the same, right? If we go back to saying, you know, what you did was wrong and then I'm going to just do it back at you again, you end up being in the same place that those that are hurting you.
Reminds me of a Martin Luther King quote where he said that violence begets violence. Anger grows more wounds. And I'm not quoting him exactly here, but at the very end, he said, the only thing that actually changes things is love.
Yes, yes.
And how powerful that feels like at this time, where what I'm watching happen, and this is part of deepening my awareness of this model, and I'll just briefly show you a piece here, is that sometimes I can feel like I am being the villain or the challenger. So let's say leadership is here and they're acting in a biased way. And I have a sense of anger. And I want to kind of direct it this way and almost make them a victim. But I don't think of it like that. I think of it like, you're going to feel the sadness that I can't feel. So I try to get them to go that way. And then instead they push back on me and they get angry back at me. And then we have some kind of conflict or war. And so that piece you said about that, the perspective of, I have to make you feel my pain for you to understand, that does burn us awake. There is an awareness that comes from that. But what I've realized is the way that I find that center, that foundation, that love place, is by looping between these two emotional states, both my anger and my sadness, by letting myself feel the grief of my own humanity, of I don't know, of I don't know how to fix this, and there's hundreds of thousands of efforts and leaders throughout many generations who have tried to find a way here, and yet here we still are. And so when I feel that despair, and then I also feel that rising fire in me that says, but if I don't work with this, if I don't try, then nothing's going to change. And I feel those together, it grows a sense of roots in me of just going like, I'm not going anywhere. I'm not going to like leave this experience. I'm going to keep trying if it's the last thing I ever do. And as I form those roots, then I just become kind of like a fire tree. I become a lava tree that people warm themselves. They're like, oh, I can't see anymore. And then they'll come up and they'll be like, you have fire. Could you point fire in my direction and tell me what I'm missing?
Yes, yes. Oh, I just love how you just did that with just the pictures of showing how things, you know, work. Mm-hmm. I love that, Ruth. It's a great way to see it. You know, what I'm learning right now in my journey is, I think, you know, everything just starts from when we grow up, and we as a society, we just want to push away the bad feelings. We always want to say like, well, just something is happening, stop crying, stop being sad. That for me is at the foundation of, you know, why we have some communication issues, why we can't express, you know, the reality of who we are and, you know, what is going on with us, because we've been conditioned to not feel what we feel. That's really something that I'm personally working on, and really feeling the pain, really feeling the anger, really feeling the sadness, all of those emotions that are part of the human experience. Because for the longest time, personally, I would just numb myself, whether it was alcohol, traveling, social media, just whatever to not feel. What I've come to realize, it's just that pain doesn't really go away. Those distractions create additional pains because you're not able to feel your pain. Ease becomes frustration, part of, you know, the anger that we express towards others. It just grows and grows. Mm-hmm. For me, one of the things that I try to do is honor that, you know, anger or you know, sadness of the world, why people behave the way, and then look at it on my own self. Because a lot of times we just want to look at it like, as this is this people that are doing it. It's also me. I do have that dark side. You understand that you're also part of it. You become more human to see others that are doing it, and to have the sense of, you know, compassion, but, you know, also justice to stand up because it's not right. So compassion to understand that, you know what, that is part of the human experience, because if we're not allowed to express ourselves, people just, you know, do those things. That's how it is.
I so love that. And that is what I call the role of the connector. So going from that place of helplessness as a bystander, and going, so connector is the transformed version. So when we're in bystander mode, we feel like we don't belong in what's happening. And that's gonna be a really easy thing for me to do as half person of color, half first generation immigrant. There's a part of me that has kind of a constant bleeding heart for, I'm white passing, but for all the disenfranchised minorities who are here and somehow are less worthy as human beings because they weren't born on the soil, or because their parents weren't born on the soil. And so I feel this sense of almost standing by to rally and become heroic on their behalf. And it's a short-lived experience when I'm trying to like slam people from heroism instead of be a connector and invite people more gently into conversations about why we hold prejudice. And I so love your words here of honoring the pain as also my own pain.
Yes, I love that. That connector is huge. And Ruth, you know, I wanted to share, this is an idea, an insight that came to me like for a while. It's been like in my mind, and I wanted to bring it up to you and see what you think about. But this is kind of like different because it's a perspective that I think particularly the white population, for them to consider. Because, well, it's not all in the white, right? But there is a group of people that are definitely very open and vocal about their racism and, you know, discrimination and their biases. And there's the other people that have it, but very subconsciously, right? But the ones that are very open about it and really don't want to change, there's a group of people that are out there like that.
Mm-hmm.
And my whole thinking, because I've been thinking about this for a while, is that what I don't think that they understand is that when you are in that space of racism, discrimination, unfairness, inequality, what you are doing to a population, yes, you'll have the people that in that population are just really not going to go nowhere, will be, you know, in the vicious cycle of victimhood, and that's a group, right?
Mm-hmm.
What you're creating is another group.
Hmm.
They know that they have to, you know, go above and beyond to be more resilient. They have to be more resourceful because they go so much more. They're just a lot more courageous. They fall even more and have to pick themselves up. And I mean, I don't know if they realize, and people realize that, you know, what you're doing is you're creating this person here, this group of people that are just amazing. Higher level, because within all that racism and hardship that you're bringing up to them, a fitter, healthier, they'll just be so, I'm just bringing it up because if people think that that's how you put people down, what you are creating is a real monster human being that is just going to be to the level. So, and you're going to have to watch out because if your intention of that racism, that, you know, you're going to be dominating and you're going to be subduing, what you're creating out here is something that is going to be really totally unexpectedly, and it's going to hit you in a way that you just are not going to be able to see it when it just happens.
Mm.
It's already happening gradually. You see a lot of minorities are in entrepreneurship at a higher rate. You know, a lot of them, when you think of athleticism, right?
Mm-hmm. A lot
of minorities are just excelling in that area. So it's more like a watch out that I put up to those people that are in that level of just really can't see it. You know, I'm outright just racist, or we're a superior race. It's more like see something differently. I think that approach is going to get you to your objectives.
That I feel you completely there. And what it reminds me of is a viral video that came out in the last few weeks. And I'm not going to remember this person's name because I'm not good with names on the spot, but she, I got to watch her interviewed on Trevor Noah's Daily Show. Trevor Noah is like the most nutritious person for me to watch these days. So on point. And he interviewed her about this viral video that came out about a month ago, where at the very end of this video, this woman is basically on the streets with the background of all the boarded up stores behind her. And she's really, really feeling the passion and anger. And what she's really well quoted for is she said, "Of course, we're burning it down. You know, we have no other choices." And she said, "You better be thankful that Black people are seeking equality and not revenge." And she said it with really intense passion. And it reminds me of this idea that people who are overtly racist, believing white is a supreme or superior race or more worthy or however they want to think about it without saying those words, that they're not subduing, they're actually imbuing minorities with a sense of purpose and creating a calling of leadership in them to prove that wrong, to prove that not true.
Yeah. It
actually totally lends to this layer when we transform the villain into the challenger and we transform the victim into the creator.
Ooh, love that.
Yeah. That what happens is that when this challenger starts to loop into a different axis of trust and curiosity, then the creator and the challenger become companions that kind of regulate for each other how creative we get and how much we need to change how we're creating to fit the middle. And so the motto for the creator, who has the symbol of the flower, not because flowers are beautiful, but because they can be crushed and torn apart. And what matters for the creator is what's in the very center of what they're offering, which is the seeds. And so the creator's motto is seed the change you wish to be in the world.
Ooh, love that.
Yeah, thank you. And they're what they need to remember is that adversity grows diversity. So the more dandelions we try to scatter and kill and tear apart, the more dandelions there are. Seeds will spread even if the gift doesn't feel complete.
Yeah.
And this isn't justifying any of the egregious murder and harm that is happening to minorities. And it does give a deep calling back to the parts of us that feel wiped out by what's happening to source from that place of devastation and come back again with more challenging and more creativity.
Yes, love it.
So thank you for saying that piece, because sometimes when I say this adversity grows diversity, I feel how this could be misconstrued as justification for putting minorities down. And that is not the full picture. The full picture for the challenger is they need to redirect their energy from trying to break whatever is happening, just this linear, like, I'm just going to slam it to make my point. And the challenger's job is to actually change that flow into a spiral and go from A to Z and find the bite-sized pieces that will help us all come back to our center. And the center is where all of our hearts come together. So the challenger needs to remember the bite-sized pieces. And if what they're offering is causing more separateness, then they're more in the villain mode. And their job is to scale down what they're offering to those bite-sized pieces.
Yes.
So thank you for this whole piece, because I think you're right. I think that, like, there's a misunderstanding of what that message is going to do. That there's a superior race or we are better than. And that it actually creates a reverse impact where it pushes people up into purpose.
Yeah, I'm totally in belief of that. And I see it even with my own self. You know, the more that you go through stuff in your life, whether it's life pushing you down or just the unfairness and inequality that goes, the more, and if you're able to survive it, the more resilient that you come back. You do stronger. Mm-hmm. And then the more that it comes upon you, the stronger that you become and the stronger that you become. So for those that think that by doing so, you're really, yeah, you're going to be able to bring down a few that are just, you're going to lose and, you know, they won't be able to stand.
Mm-hmm.
It's a group of people that are going to emerge that are to be so much stronger. Like you think as a minority, in order for you to be in leadership roles, you have to be, you know, 10x what the other person is, because, you know, that's what you're going against. So, you know, you just have to up your game so much that that's what you're creating with that. Mm. Creating a superior, intelligent group. Mm.
I love that. It reminds me of the words, I can't breathe, and how it's probably already been written by someone more brilliant and articulate than me, but how that is transferring to finally, but I can scream. And I can march, and I can teach everyone around me that we need a change right now. And that's the piece that feels like hope. It feels like we're marching for hope. I feel both sadness right now and also gratitude. It's such a tough area that we're in right now, because there's so much possibility that the changes won't set in a big level, in a deep level, if we don't keep making it a practice of purpose, and that this generation and probably every generation after us has to become inoculated with a sense of vigilance, grounded presence, to be a part of that new awakened human.
Yes.
And so how does that show up for you? How do you feel your own self awakening during this time of Black Lives Matter?
You know, I think that at the end of it all, is that what you're saying there? It's all about gaining, you know, that awareness. Mm-hmm. You know, it'll translate into the way that you judge or deal or look at others that are different than you by having that awareness, right?
Yeah.
Like for me in particular, like the most important thing, you know, there's two things that in this life, and I try to teach this to my kids, but there are two learnings, the biggest learnings that I've had in my life. And one is around awareness. And it is to have the opportunity to look at yourself honestly, radically honestly, and see within you those things that are really not working for you because they're hurting you or they're hurting others. And all have that, you know, compass inside of us. No, there's not like somebody else to tell us. We know it deep inside. We know what is right. We know what is wrong. It's something that you just have that wisdom. So a lot of us, myself included, you know, for the longest time, I'm 43 now. I'm starting to practice self-awareness about a year ago, where it's part of my daily practice, and it has been overwhelming. It has been tons of emotions, Ruth, because when you see yourself with your humanness, with all your flaws, you're just humbled. You're humbled by, you know, all that you're able to see and that is wrong with you. And at the beginning for me, it was like too much, and it felt like, oh my gosh, like, it brings that shame and that guilt. And it was not until I understood that I had to let go of that shame and guilt, that I can see myself with my flawness, with my humanness, and look at myself with compassion and understand that that's part of the journey. It's to let go of a lot of those limiting beliefs, but it starts with that awareness of knowing, you know, what it is within you. And then, you know, seeing it with compassion. And then the next step is forgiveness, because when you forgive yourself for all the things that you've done, that you are doing, and then what you're going to do, because we're humans, it's going to happen. But that level of forgiveness that we can give to our own selves, it's what, you know, gives us that freedom, that ability to just let go and just be who you are, just free and a loving human being. Yes, for me, awareness, Ruth, has been like the biggest thing that I have learned in life. And the other one is self-love, because, you know, for the longest time, you know, I didn't even understand what it was. And it ties to that awareness, because when you see it all, you have to love yourself. You have to, you know, take care of yourself. And a lot of people think about self-love as selfishness. It's not about selfishness. It's about just being, just loving, you know, the right choices that are going to work for you. Putting yourself first. Doing that all from that space of compassion.
It's so hard to do, especially during this time where so many people are experiencing survival and times feel so uncertain. And yet what it reminds me of is that putting myself first can look like taking a deep breath before I intervene.
Yes.
And giving myself the oxygen first before I tell anyone else to take a deep breath.
Yes. Yes, totally, totally. And I think that it's even more important when we are going through tough moments where our health is in jeopardy, when our finances, that's when we need that self-love even more. Instead of, you know, that inner critic that is telling us, you know, all the things that we're doing wrong. That's when we need that compassion, that love, that opportunity to take that first next step that we can do to help us get out of the situation that we are, because that comes from awareness. Because if we're not aware, a lot of the things that happen to us, there are things that are just out of our control, right? But there's a chunk of things that are in our control that acts of self-love can get you out of the situation where you are. But you can't do those things until you are in understanding of what's going on, and it's through awareness.
So there's a way that, like, that self-awareness expands the scope of how I can look at the world and act with more center and more ground to use the love that I'm giving, compassion and forgiveness to myself, to give that love and compassion to others.
Yeah.
Wow. So that is just such a message. It feels like something I will meditate on for a long time. The transformed leader or hero from the scarcity view into the abundance view is the coach in this model. And the coach is about seeing the change we wish to be in the world. It's acknowledging that the change is already happening in others and landing on what grows us about others. And so the symbol for the coach is the butterfly. Because when we're truly acting from that humble place of heart, we don't feel like a superhero, we feel like this big. And there's a sense of just wanting to touch ever so slightly the pieces that awaken us and give us a sense of purpose. And so as our last piece for our dotcast today, I wonder if we could practice that kind of active transformational awareness with you and I, in just recognizing how you and I today, in what we've shared, have changed each other. You know, what's the overlap, but also how have we both grown in sharing today? And so this is the place where we get to coach each other and say, ah, I learned so much from you in this way, or I feel different here. One example of that for me is I actually, as we've talked, I feel a sense of sadness that is like a relief to feel. It feels like if you had shoes on your feet, they would be well worn and well loved, that you've been marching this march for much longer than I have. And so I feel this sadness of missing all those worn shoes in my own heroship, in my own attempt to save and tell people how it should be. And so I have a grief about the mistakes I've made there, but also a relief in the forgiveness it gives me of all the people who haven't woken up yet or are still waking up like I am. And so that is a way you've transformed me. You've helped me find my sadness. And that's mostly a relief.
Oh, thank you. And I appreciate that. And I can't tell you that, you know, I've worn those shoes. I think that, you know, a lot of us, I feel the sadness with you. There is so much work to be done. including myself, you know, there's so much more that, you know, we all can do. And it starts with, you know, our own selves and, you know, our families and the people that are close to us. And then we can, you know, be that beacon of light elsewhere. For me, you know, there's so much more to do. And I appreciate that you have invited me to have this conversation, really put myself out there in the way that I could do. So you have really inspired me to really take that action and be in a more active role towards the message. So
that's really beautiful to hear. I'm like, I've inspired you to be more active. You've inspired me to be more introspective. So I think we're switching places a little bit there.
Yes, true.
So such joy and gratitude. I want to be respectful of your time. So we will close up our dotcast today and recognizing that we have, see if my screen will work here. We have deepened, oriented, and transformed from sharing a moment together around a tough topic, a leadership bias. I feel a bit sometimes like these podcasts or dotcasts are my confessional to the world, where I already have my own, you know, therapist and have had therapy for many years, and I also am a therapist. And so this is my leveling up, which is just showing the world, you know, you can do 20 years of self work and still learn the same things at a different level that really feels shattering, but in a good way.
Absolutely. And that's what I think, you know, for me, my biggest thing that I've learned from you, Ruth, is that vulnerability that you have shown throughout. Mm. And we need those kind of leaders in this world. We need more vulnerability, because it is through that vulnerability that we can change. It is also connect with others. It's that opportunity to really, you know, be who you are and allow people to be who they are. Mm. Because we live in this society that wants to be just so perfect, and we're not. Nobody is. We'll never be. We need to know about the real humans out there, you know, those people like you and me that, you know, are able to speak up and say, I am guilty too. I did too. I continue to do it. I most likely will be doing it. It doesn't make it right.
Yeah.
It shows that aspect that we're willing to change and look at ourselves and continue to evolve. We're in this journey for that.
Yeah, no, my favorite thing as a leader, in a painful way, but like a good pain way, is that I get to talk almost daily to people who are following me in some way about how I'm messing up. And I do it intentionally out of, first of all, the like, hey, I might have a blind spot here, and I'm giving you permission to tell me if I've messed up even more than I think I have. And I also do it to remind myself that I'm practicing more awareness around this area. And so it's kind of like this is an under construction place, and I need my whole team holding this with me, because I might mess it up, and I probably will over and over again. And what it seems to be doing as I name my vulnerabilities is that it seems to be like bringing a passion to my team that I haven't sensed before. And that is really a beautiful thing to watch. Yeah.
Yes, yes. That's awesome, because you'll have that team out there representing you just like you are. I come from the background of sales and marketing, and if there's one thing that I tell anybody that wants to be able to market better and sell, is the key is in your vulnerability. If you're willing to be able to be raw and open, the more that you're going to be able to connect with others, your message will stand out from the noise. That's how you're going to be able to get your message spread in a way that it'll just make a bigger impact.
Mm. Wow. What a way to close today. The key is in your vulnerability. Whew. Well, again, Carolina, such gratitude. My heart is bursting and also very grounded and crying. So yeah, I can imagine that wherever you are being a leader, people are getting the opportunity to transform around you as they feel that vulnerable witness that you bring of first recognizing your own your own blind spots, your own shortcomings, and talking about how you're working on those and forgiving yourself in them, which I forget sometimes to do. So we're going to close here. And any last thoughts for you, or we'll just say goodbye at this point, and then you and I will check in after this.
So this thank is, you. Thank
yeah,
you
so of course. This is DotCast with Ruth and Carolina. And we'll bye, have another episode in another week.